Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to today's chat. We have Sophie Power, who I've been really wanting to get on the show for ages and ages, and finally we've managed to grab her. She's a GB runner, she's an ultra runner, she's a mum of three, she's the founder of She Races, which we'll be talking about today, trying to remove barriers to racing for women. And she, I think, Sophie, you're probably kind of most famous for, I think, for me, you're most famous for breastfeeding and pumping during the UTMB in 2019. Is that sort of when you sort of shot to fame, would you say?
I was properly under the radar, just like getting on with my running, kind of minding my own business, and then someone takes a photo of me. So I've been ultra running since 2009 2010, but it was only 2016 when that picture was taken that I didn't have social media before then, so there was nothing. I just did my own racing, and then I realized that actually, I could talk about my racing and that might help some other people. So life changed rather dramatically overnight.
Yeah, it really did. Because there was a lot of, like, we've seen since then a lot of other women breastfeeding and pumping during races. But it seemed to be like yours was the first one that people just saw, and just everybody seemed to, for some reason, be really shocked by it. And like, what else are you going to do? it seems madness. And I was just reading your latest post on Instagram about some of the comments you got about it. And I was really like, what are we in the 21st century? Like, who are these people saying, why do you have the right to breastfeed at a race? And aren't you being selfish? I just thought that was really, really surprising and shocking, I thought.
I think it was. I mean, the overwhelming reaction was so positive. I mean, the picture's on so many levels, because one, it's talking about kind of why was I there? You know, they wouldn't defer my place for pregnancy, and we'll probably get onto that with She Races. But also the fact that, you know, when you become a mother, kind of society, kind of in a lot of ways, and social media expects you to just be mother. And then we have our kind of dreams, we have our sense of self that's not us as mother, and our identity as mother is very important, but our identity as ourselves shouldn't change. And keeping those goals after motherhood, I think a lot of women feel that they're not allowed to have them. And I think just showing there, you know, I had my goal, I was going to do it. And, you know, to do it, I had to breastfeed my 3-month-old baby while getting around the course and pump out. And my husband kind of carried him around where he could. And it's just what mums have to do. And, you know, there's an added layer, but what it did raise is like, this is okay. You know, you can go after your goals, and then it's okay to breastfeed in public. Of course we should breastfeed. It's the most natural thing there is. So
yeah.
I think it gave a lot of women confidence to sign up to a 10K that they wanted to do, or even just to take their baby out and breastfeed in public. And you know, I'm so proud that kind of putting that out there has kind of helped so many people.
Yeah, it's absolutely fantastic. And since then, we've seen Jasmine Parrish. She was expressing milk and breastfeeding, I I can't remember if she was breastfeeding. She was definitely expressing on the spine race, wasn't she? And she won like whilst doing that. And it's just fantastic that we have these inspirational people like you to inspire us. But I just wanted to just kind of rewind a little bit after we've just set that scene about what do you love most about running? Like, what is it for you that really makes running your thing?
That's such a complicated question. So I wasn't.
Oh no, I thought this would be an easy question.
Properly rewinding, I was not a runner at school.
Really?
I was second last in the mile.
Uh-huh.
I was the non-athlete. I was but overweight and had no confidence. And I accidentally started running when I signed up for the marathon to Saab, having never run more than a mile.
Oh my God.
My friend had just done it, and I'd been made redundant in this awful way from a job in finance, and I was a bit lost. And I'd gone off to a kickboxing camp in Thailand for a couple of months to learn to kick people in the head. And they were my old boss.
That is a good reaction.
And he just said, you know, you're really good at hiking. And I grew up hiking in the Lake District. My grandma's in the Lake District. And we'd done these marches and when I trained in the Air Force when I was in university. And he said, you'd be great. And so I signed up, didn't know what it was, got a charity place, had 9 months to train. So then go straight to the desert. And I think what happened was I realized that I love being outside. I love exploring new places. I think for the years after that, before I had children, I did lots of these stage races across the world from kind of Bhutan, Iceland, Cambodia. Well, that was a bit of I got in a coma then. That was a bit weird. Utah, Nepal. It was amazing. And I love being outside. I love exploring new places. I love sharing trails with friends. I love meeting new people. And I love how running breaks you down and that you don't have this face on that you can have in a meeting when you're uncontrolled. You know, you're hanging. So you have to be your true self. And I really like me time. I like being on my own a lot. Mm. And running gives me that without the distractions. So, and I guess now more, I mean, I've only really taken running, I'd say, semi-seriously in the last year. And now it's given me a kind of a reason to prove and push my body to the limits and really see what I can do. And I'm getting a lot of confidence in the rest of my life from that and setting an example to my three kids. And I've got a daughter now, so it's especially important for me to show her, you know, you can achieve what you set yourself out to. So it's so much. Sorry, that's a bit complicated.
No, it sounds like escapism, me time, everything rolled into one, and just enjoying the great outdoors and hiking, which is ultra running, basically what we were just discussing pre-on-air. It sounds completely, completely understandable for me. But you've got three kids, two boys and a little girl now as well. And I'm really interested to know, having just had a kid myself and only having one, I just really want to know how you fit in all the training, because I mean, you represented Great Britain at the IAU 24-hour European Championships in Verona really recently, and you were fourth Brit, and you got a new PB, which is absolutely fantastic. And then like this weekend you've got Wendover Woods, and I just don't know how you fit it all in. Like, I can't even fit it in with one kid. How do you fit it in with three? Have you got a secret nanny?
It's a juggle. I think first of all is having kids, like there's a lot of training for running that isn't just going out and running. Mm. So if I think about my school run, like last night, it's over 2 miles. It's hilly. I've got my 2-year-old who must weigh about, I don't know, 12 kilos, 13 kilos on my back. That's training.
Yeah.
So if often you see these training plans and they say you've got to run 50 miles, 60 miles this week. That's for people who have desk jobs. Mm. If you're a busy mum and you're walking everywhere and you're hiking and you're lifting babies, because that can be your strength training. And we do silly things like kind of burpees with my 4 and 7-year-old and press ups. And that all counts. So I think first of all, it's like taking the comparison away from people who do not have kids, because we actually have a naturally more active part of our life that really does count, and not looking at mileage totals and things, because I've never run big mileage, I've never been able to. And then it's like I train straight after I drop the kids off in the morning. Mm-hmm. That's the before I start work, that is the gap And then I'm really lucky to have we put a gym in our house. So I started to do a few treadmill sessions if the weather's bad, or on Fridays and Mondays when I have my daughter, you know, when she naps, I can go on the treadmill. So I'm really lucky to have that. But it's a juggle. It's the weekend juggle is, you know, kind of kids do their sports activities on a Saturday morning. I get Saturday mornings to train. My husband gets Sunday mornings. He's a cyclist to train. It's all a juggle, but I think I don't watch TV and I don't really have any time. My time to myself is my running. Yeah. There's not any, I work in the evenings till too late at night. I think it's fitting in and being really flexible. And if you're going somewhere, like we go to a National Trust place, I'll be like, great, I'll meet you there. I'll run 10 miles there. And then my husband, if he wanted to, could run a shorter way back or something. So yeah, it's a juggle, but I think we're just really creative. Mums are really creative about how we're going to do it. Same with dads who are runners as well. Just trying to fit it all in, and not comparing yourself to people who don't have the same challenges. And it's really hard when you see kind of even women on the team who aren't parents or who have older children.
Yeah.
You can't do what they do. Mm. So you just have to optimize what you can.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really amazing how you like really squeeze every ounce of time available. But I'm also wondering, like, sometimes aren't you just exhausted? Like you say, on Mondays and Fridays, like you can train during your daughter's nap. But I could do that on a Monday when I have Finley. But sometimes I'm just really exhausted and I go to bed. Like I just, and sometimes, you know, like he wakes up in the night. You've got three to potentially wake up in the night at any point. You know, when they're really young, they wake up in the night a lot. I just don't know how you had the strength to do the UTMB with a three-month-old baby, because when Finley was 3 months old, he was still waking up like twice, three times in the night sometimes. Like was that your situation, or did you just get really lucky with a baby that slept through?
No, not at age. But I think when you think about it, like your UTMB, you start at 6 at night,
yeah,
and you're going through kind of potentially kind of two nights. If you're used to not sleeping, like you're the best prepared person on that start line, because no one else is up all night.
Yeah.
So for me, it was training. Like the sleepless nights were just really good training. I think it was an issue. Like most people sleep in the day or they're quite low active. And I had a 4-year-old as well. Mm. They wanted to go for a hike. So we were up in a mountain in the day and then back, and I got a quick nap in, and then it was straight to the start line. So that was more difficult, but no, I think it's hard, and I think you just have to be nice to yourself. And sometimes we're just really knackered. I found that I needed to just eat more. When I was knackered, just eat more gave me a lot more energy to do things and find those sessions that I really like doing.
Yeah.
So kind of on the low impact, like I really love a treadmill hike on an incline.
Yeah.
And I find no matter how tired I am,
yeah,
I can always do a treadmill hike because you just go a bit slower or lower incline, and you still got that boost from pushing your heart rate up, but it's not being that sprint session or that really hard run. So kind of changing the sessions, going on the bike. Fridays will be recovery day. So it's normally kind of 3-4 miles on the treadmill, kind of chilled out. Or if my husband works from home, I can put her to nap and I can actually go out on the trail. So, I think being nice, there's no point if you're knackered. The last thing you need is to do a hard workout and make yourself even more tired. But even if you do some stretches, some Pilates, something, I think for me, it always makes me feel a bit better.
Yeah. Yeah. I see what you mean. Like a lot of times I would go out for a run in my running stuff and then be like, I can't, I can walk. That's all I can do. And that's made me feel a lot better about those times, because you don't always have to run. And of course, in ultra running, it's not always running, is it? As we know, a lot of ultra running is actually hiking, especially with those longer distances.
I got so much trouble for describing UTMB as a long hike.
Well, it is. It's a long hike.
It is.
I didn't see hardly anyone running. No,
I was there. I got loads of abuse from,
really?
Mostly from guys who had told everyone this is like massive run, and I'm like, look at the times. I mean, it takes most people over 41 hours to do 106 miles. Of course you're walking. So I got loads of views for guys at Thurb. I made it sound a bit soft, but it was, I think
soft.
This is the thing about doing it with a 3-month-old baby. You know, my pelvic floor was horrendous after my first. I knew I had to protect it. I knew my pelvis hadn't gone back together. I couldn't run downhills.
Mm.
I knew that was a red flag for pelvic pain, so I had to hike it, And you can hike it in the time allowed with maybe a bit of gentle jogging on the flats. It's completely doable. And I think changing, this is like kind of she race, but changing how we talk about these harder races or these longer races, and changing the language around saying this is the hardest, toughest, whatever, to this is the time you have, this is the average speed you need to do, this is the kind of terrain you're going over. Therefore, if you can do this for kind of, if you can jog 10K and you can hike for 8 hours,
yeah,
you can finish UTMB in the right, something like that. It's,
yeah,
it's just a much better way of talking about it. And I think racers want to say they're the biggest and toughest, but that's a very alienating language to a lot of women.
Mm, yeah, and men, like not all men want to do the biggest and toughest necessarily sometimes. Like, my husband doesn't. Like, that would put him right off. But you've just made me feel like I could do the UTMB now, which is a very dangerous possibility. I would love to. I'd love to, but I keep saying on this, I want to do it over 6 days, because what's the point of doing it when it's dark? Because you want to see all the views. So I'll do that first. And then I think
I want to go back and see the views. And
come with me next 2024 in the summer.
There we go. I think fast packing it would be, and this is where I think, can you split down races into things you want to race and things you want to enjoy? And
yeah.
I'd love to see the UTMB route. Some of the big mountain races, it's tough, but I don't know. There's a lot of races where you split. There's a running side and the toughness, dark side, and it takes away some of the enjoyment. And sometimes I want to do more that's running, like the 24s. And
yeah,
sometimes, like Wendover, is just, I want to go up and down some hills and some mud to have a day away from the kids, really.
Yeah, I hear you. Definitely. I love going out and running without Finley. I sometimes take him in the buggy. I hate running with a buggy. It's great if you can run with a buggy and that's the only running you can do. That's fantastic. It's very freeing. But if we're given a choice, buggy or no buggy, I'd definitely go for no buggy. I've even, my friends have been marshalling at Parkrun, and they've said, and he's fallen asleep, so they've said, just leave him here. So I've done like half of Parkrun with the buggy, dropped him off, and then run the rest of Parkrun, and then I'll walk back for him afterwards, because that's how much I hate running with a buggy.
I don't think anyone, but it's an enabler. And
yeah.
So I do junior Parkrun with a buggy, with Sash in the buggy, my youngest in the buggy, and I ran my 4-year-old, and my 7-year-old zooms off ahead.
Yeah.
But I used to reuse the buggy for getting around.
Yeah.
So my 4-year-old had gymnastics class, and it was 2 miles away. So I'd jog in there in the buggy, which he loved, and it was a bit hilly. And I'm like, it's so hard to push a running buggy up a hill.
It's really hard, yeah.
It's a good workout. And he's like, why aren't you going fast? I'm like, because it's a hill. Really
pedal.
But that's 4 miles that I wouldn't have got if I'd driven or hiked. And kind of thinking about how you can use the buggy to kind of go places and kind of push kind of the baby around and get things done. It is an enabler, and I mean, it's quicker when you run than when you walk.
Yeah.
And I'm impatient, so.
And you save time. Yeah.
But going on a run, I mean, no buggy, just me on my own. Thank you very much.
Yes, definitely. And you can't take the buggy on the proper trails, can you? Like, you can't like take them on a skinny single track with roots and rocks and everything. It'd just be, you'd just be back to walking and hiking the buggy over everything. I just want to pick up on something that you mentioned about the time it takes in races, because Hannah Basley, that's her married name. She's really gutted that she's working right now, so she can't actually listen live. But she'll listen back later. So I'm going to read out her comment, because she's a massive fan of yours. She says, gutted, I'm working. I love the work Sophie is doing with She Races. I just saw that the Highland Way Ultra has 276 men and 76 women plus 2 non-binary, a marked difference, which I'm sure is sadly the norm as races get longer. I hope they do a fair ballot like the Lakeland 50/100 do. As a busy mum who struggles to fit in training, I personally love a race with a generous cutoff. It feels so inclusive. There are some races where I look at the cutoffs and I know it'd be doubly tough for me, so I steer clear. So is that, I know that you're also working on deferrals for pregnancy and removing barriers to racing for women in lots of other different ways, which we can talk about here. But is that one of the things that you're working on as well with races, is about cutoff times?
Absolutely. I mean, I ran a survey and we got over 2,000 responses. Mm. And it was really just to find women's views on running in general. So trail running, road running, everything. We have runners, everything from 5Ks to ultras, talking about why we run and what we love about races, and especially some of the barriers and the negative experiences we've had and what puts us off applying for a race, what kind of isn't great during a race, and what we don't like about how they often don't value our competition. And I just got the numbers in front of me. So 44% of women have been put off by a race because of the cutoffs. Mm-hmm. It's a huge amount.
Yeah.
And I think kind of She Races, what I did with the survey responses was just develop it into guidelines for races to say, this is how you can be more inclusive of women. And it's kind of, there's a huge detailed amount on there on the website, kind of sheraces.com, and they don't apply to every race, but there's the races that sign up, there's some kind of ones that do. But when you talk about cutoffs, a lot of it's about the language. So kind of saying what you need to do to get to each checkpoint, and then you can get that in your head going, no, I can do that. Making sure you don't have fast cutoffs at the start, because women often pace kind of better over, and we don't want to get worried about getting to the first few, even though we'll get to the end in time.
Yeah.
And then being flexible. I think we've got to be very conscious that some races need to close up. They've only got permits for so long. You don't want volunteers out there. But you can be, so we had a foul race that was really struggling to attract women, especially kind of over 50s women. Mm-hmm. And their view was they had very tight cutoffs because the volunteers had to be on the mountain for a certain amount of time, which is absolutely acceptable. What they did was they said, you know what, we can have an early start.
Yeah.
So they don't have to have the checkpoints open any longer. And those people can want, and what they got is double the amount of women over 50 and signed up.
Yeah.
Of what's signed up for next year, because it's now accessible. And even though they might be within the original cutoffs, they've got all that confidence. And we have races that don't have cutoffs.
Yeah.
So X Energy, a brilliant ultra provider of kind of a lot of intro ultras, there is no cutoff.
Wow.
They're about 30 miles each day, and there's a walker start at 8. There's a mass start, walker start at 7 often, mass start at 8, fast people start at 9.
Yeah.
And, you know, you've got until you finish. If you keep moving,
yeah,
they'll let you finish. Yeah. And so it doesn't apply for a lot of races. I mean, Spartathlon's the obvious kind of, if you don't do it in 36 hours, you know, you didn't do it.
Okay.
But there's a lot I think races can think of and look at where their runners are and just communicate the cutoffs. And make sure that you're fully supporting those runners towards the back of the field where the checkpoints are still stocked with everything the faster runners would have had. And you're not closing down the course. And you're making sure that they're kind of treated with the same respect that the fast runners would be. So it's really simple things that often aren't thought about. But we can use those to attract so many more women to every distance of race by giving you the confidence that however, kind of, as long as you're keeping going and you're within those kind of guideline times, you know, you will be supported to get your goal.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I know I saw those guidelines when you were first putting them together. And I just think it's really handy for races to just have a list of a to-do list, because they might be really open to make it. I mean, why would you not want more entrants to your race? Everybody wants to attract the other 50% of the population, which is women. So why would you not want to make your race more women friendly? It's a no-brainer for race entries, isn't it? And I really like the idea of starting earlier. So, and also for the first cutoff, not to be too harsh, because I totally get what you mean. Like, women pace themselves differently to men, and they're very capable over really, really long distances, but not necessarily it's going to stress them out and just, it might make them, you know, lose out on finishing the race if they have to really kick up the pace for that first checkpoint. So I think that's a really great suggestion. It's awesome.
I think the guidelines is, and a lot I hadn't thought about either. So I don't profess to be to know everything. So I spoke to loads of race directors, because I didn't want this to be kind of, you must do X, Y, and Z. It wasn't possible for a race. It was going to cost them loads of money.
Mm.
It's got to be something that's really, things that are really easy to do. And I know that the things that kind of cost the money are often increased toilet provision.
Yeah.
So thinking about how we can do that. And so things like Camino have races often in London, and they've just put a map out of all the public toilets en route.
Yeah.
costs them absolutely nothing, but really makes it go, okay, well, I know where I can go to the toilet, because it's quite hard in the middle of London to go on a bus to kind of go to the toilet on the side of you don't want to do it, really. So some things like that, and the unisex t-shirts is, we'll take out t-shirts and have people buy a quality t-shirt if they're really going to wear it, or kind of do trees not tees. So
which is more eco-friendly.
Trying to make it really open, but I mean, I learned a lot that I hadn't thought about, especially some of the safety aspects on, for example, asking to have people anonymized in the results or in start lists, and trackers, and making women feel safer on course. Kind of, I read through so many, I had like thousands of experience comments to read through, and just took them all into account and go, how do we communicate that to racers? Because I don't think women feedback or confident to feedback how racers can do better. And a lot of she races is because I campaigned for the pregnancy deferrals and it was taking over my life. And how do we get every woman empowered to say to a race, this is how you can do better for women. Just send the guidelines, and give your experiences. And that means we can have so much more change than just me picking up the phone and writing letters.
Yeah. Is that what, when did you originally start She Races then? What was the catalyst, the pregnancy deferral that you weren't able to do for UTMB? Was that the main reason to start it up at first?
I think I started, so it's only started in June, which is crazy because it's kind of exploded.
Yeah, it sounds like it's been around forever. That's brilliant.
It was June. And I had great help from kind of Anna Harding to kind of from the Running Channel to kind of help me kind of put it together and think about it. But it was really the London Marathon campaign. So last year, I had a message about a lady who'd not been allowed to defer her Good for Age place. She had a championship place. She wasn't allowed to defer it. And so because of the London Marathon was run 8 months apart that year, they were allowing her to run it 8 weeks postpartum because that was her original place, but not 8 months postpartum. And they refused, and the thing behind it was very much, they're like, well, the further you are away from your qualification time, the less likely you are to repeat it, which holds in, I would say, pretty much every case, except if you've had a baby in between, because you are going to be faster at 8 months and 8 weeks. And I think kind of this campaign, and it took months, it genuinely took months of talking to them and just trying to work out how we get that changed. And they took it away and they changed it. And to their credit, they've actually gone and done a whole inclusivity piece and has some of the best guidelines out there now, kind of 3 years deferral for pregnant, and you hold your category. So you hold your championship or you're good for age. It's fantastic. So we succeeded there and it's brilliant. And now Berlin are doing it too. We finally got UTMB over the line.
Yes, which, I saw that recently. That's fantastic.
Which I was really excited about because I kind of said I can't do UTMB again until they allow deferrals, and now they do, and it's like, oh, should I go back? But I think it was really from that, and from that fight and from London Marathon, and realizing there were so many more races and being inundated with requests to write to races, and then people sharing the experience and saying it's not just pregnancy deferrals, it's so many other barriers, and thinking, how do we address them all at once, and how can someone like me, who is a very busy kind of working mum of three, make a difference and make the biggest difference I can? And that's kind of where She Races came out.
Wow. And is She Races, like, is that a charity then that you've set up, or is it your job as well?
No, it's not my job. If it's my job, that'd make life easier if I had more time for it. So it's a kind of charities are a nightmare to set up because of all the accounting. I'm an accountant, but I can't be bothered to do charity accounts. So it's just a campaign, but we are looking for funding, because what I really need is some support to hire in some social media, some admin, to really kind of start going out. It's my kind of 8 till 11 at night job, which isn't really sustainable with training.
I go to bed at 9 these days. How on earth would you work till 11? That's amazing.
My kids do sleep through. They sleep amazingly.
Oh, so brilliant.
That's how. But I think, no, we're looking for funding and brands to work with, and also spread the word. So the race platforms, anyone that can get out the message. The goal is, I mean, racers can sign up for free, and then we promote them on the platform. People can click through on the website to races that have kind of committed to the guidelines. And it really is it started to kind of change the guidelines and races and get more women into races. And then I'd love it to start supporting women to just have the confidence to sign up in the first place.
Yeah.
And more to that. So that's where I'd like it to go. But it is, we need some support. So hopefully some brands will see this and get in touch.
Yeah. Well, I've seen on your Instagram you do various work with brands from time to time. So maybe one of those will pick up on it. I think it's a really hot topic at the moment, isn't it? Inclusivity for all, not just women, but anybody with any barriers in the trail running world. So it would be a fantastic campaign for any brand to get behind, I think.
No, it's I think that's where it has to go. And getting myself, but it's not, I mean, there's some brilliant organizations and Mother in the States who are doing focus on women and kind of child sisters, and I think learning from them, there's not very much out there working specifically on races. There's a lot breaking down the barriers in general and running, and I think racing is quite special because it's a way of kind of, it's not just running, you can't, it's a way of kind of achieving something and working towards a goal. And I think we need to break down the barriers and get more women running, but I think we can get so much out of racing that it's important we have the ability to do that too.
Yeah, well, it's absolutely fantastic. And if anybody is a race director and watching this, where should they go to find more out about the directions and the kind of to-do list to make things more palatable for more women to start running more races?
So we're Instagram, we're she.races. On the website is sheraces.com, and you can download the guidelines and the kind of commitment form to sign up, and then we'll get your logo on the website. But I think the big thing for races is talk to the women that are doing the race. Ask a feedback form, say, how can we do better? Look at how many women are signing up to your race. We've had kind of race directors say, no, I can't get more than 15% women on my race, and I'm showing them a race that's the same distance and they've got 40%. And then you compare what they're doing. We've got some really inclusive races that really are. I mean, we don't expect more than 50% of women to be doing the longer ultras, but UTMB is 8% on the start line. You can definitely improve on that. So it's look at your race, think about what you can do, look for feedback. And I think it's a request to women, you know, look at the races that you're signed up to, kind of have a look at their website and say, kind of, is the imagery inclusive? Do I feel that I belong on that? If not, point it out to them. Like, we pointed out a few websites where it's all been, I mean, white skinny men on the pictures.
Yeah, middle-aged skinny men. And they all look
and that alienates other men too.
Yeah.
Not everyone is a white skinny man. And so kind of, and they've been horrified when they realise, but they've used their start line picture as their main picture.
Yeah.
And so kind of things like, if you look at the imagery on like Maverick, it's amazing. It's just everyone there, and everyone would feel kind of that they belong in one of those races. And that's what kind of women need to do. So kind of call out them on imagery for races you haven't done yet, and in any kind of details on the race that you think could be included on the website. And then when you've done the race, give feedback. Say, you know, this was great, but do you know what? You didn't have separate women's toilets, or there was actually no toilet provision, or we were held in this field for half an hour, the men were peeing and we couldn't, or unisex t-shirts, or your race coverage mixed in the women's results with the men's results, so we couldn't see our podium. So really things like that you can point out to race directors really helps it feel kind of more inclusive for the next women that are going to be running the race.
And I remember when I first started reporting on races and things, when I first set up Trail Running Magazine, the top three women wasn't as big a deal as the top three men who were like winning the overall race. But as the time has gone on, and we've seen people like Jasmine Paris winning races outright and things like, and Sabrina Virgie winning things outright as well, just the amount of coverage that's given to the women's race now is much, much better than it was a decade ago. And I just find that absolutely brilliant. It's annoying that it was like that, but it's brilliant the work that you and everybody else has done to get more representation for the women's podium, because the women's race is really exciting. It's super exciting.
Centurion has sent out the race preview for Wendover on Saturday, and know, there's 9 or 10 women listed and they've researched everyone.
Yeah.
And there's 9 or 10 men listed.
Yeah.
And they've talked about the depth of the races and they really, you know, I feel engaged in both races going, this has been really exciting.
Yeah.
And that shows everyone, and there'll be men that see those women and know the names on the race day. Yeah. And then when they do, everything is completely equal. A lot of the run platforms or the timings, they still just mix us in. Mm. And don't celebrate. And we shouldn't only be celebrated if we're podiuming outright. We're a completely separate category. Yeah. And it should be celebrated no matter how far the women are down. And if you want a competitive race and you're a race director and you don't have women you feel that are competitive, have a look at what you're doing to attract them.
Yeah.
Because women are there to run and we will race, but yeah. Just make it attractive for us to be on your start line.
Yeah, invite some really good women runners along. Say, hey, do you want a free place? And, you know, we want a great women's race here. Come along. And like when I reported on UTMB, even this year, 2022, it is now, just checking, the women's finish was brilliant. Like when Katie Scheid came over the finish line, there was tons of people that all came back because everyone disappeared for a bit and then they all came back. But then for the second woman and third woman, it was like hardly anyone there. And I was a like category C journalist, so I was like round the corner, but I was able to go and sit with Brian from I Run Far at the front because no one really cared about the second and third place women, which is like, I found that really disappointing. But Brian was there, and Brian, you know, in his pre-race, he's listed, him and Megan have listed the top 10 women, 10 men. He's fantastic. Ian Corliss also lists all the women all the time. They have tirelessly always, I think, supported the women. Yeah. So I don't really understand why there's this lack of interest from like the rest of the population. It's like, come on, women, we need to support the women as well.
It's a timing as well. I think looking at the time of the race, you know, the men are going to finish kind of early afternoon. So your 6 o'clock start, the men's winners has been like 21 or so.
Yeah.
So you're kind of 3 in the afternoon. Female winner might be 6 later.
Yeah.
When the podium comes through 8, 9, it's not conducive to that. And I think kind of UTMB are really working hard, and they've done their own big survey.
Mm.
That they were supposed to release the results of at UTMB, but they're going to, they're still working on it, but they've really tried to understand how to get more women on their start lines because they're very, very, very low.
Yeah.
And they're a commercial organization, and you know, it's down to business. And if you're struggling to fill your races and you've got less than 20% women, the easiest place to go is women make up 50% of runners, more than that, I think, in the UK now. So that's the easiest market to tap, and they're really trying to understand how to do that. So I hope that we start to see change in all aspects, but coverage would be great because we kind of have to see it to be it, and seeing more women on the start lines. And when you're on the start line and you're surrounded by men, you're like, this doesn't feel very...
No one's going to lend me a tampon. Yeah. When I see loads of men on the start line, I actually am like, ah, brilliant. I will be able to get into the women's toilets. Because, you know, like, round here.
Unless the men are in there, which is what happened to me in the last race. And I'm in the women's toilets and, like, the bit by the... And I'm putting, like, lube down my shorts. And this guy barges in. Yeah. And you're like, get out. And he's like, oh. And it's like, there's a queue in the men's. I'm like... This is my life. I'm a woman. We queue all the time.
Yeah.
Get used to it. Like, off you go into the queue.
For
we
one
don't
day.
Your toilets.
Yeah, you want for what? Actually, at uni, if there was a big queue for the women's in a club, we did used to go in the men's. But the other way around is not allowed. But yeah, a lot of our races around here are in village halls, and they have like 2 toilets in a small cubicle, and there's a huge queue for the men's. And I'm like, yes. There's 3 women in the queue for the women's, and we're all like, ha. Yeah, so no more women at races because we won't be able to use the toilets. But no, seriously, it's definitely a great thing if the UTMB had more women. You've made me think I might be able to do it one day. So that's 8.0001% now. So it's fantastic that you've started She Races. Is there anything anyone watching can do to support She Races, other than obviously following it and you on Instagram? You're Ultra Sophie, aren't you? And She Races is she.races. Is there anything else that people can do to support She Races? Have you got like a crowdfunding thing or anything set up? Or
no, but I need to set one up. This is going to be by the time kind of this comes out to people, I need to set one up. I think if they can kind of support, so we can get some social media support, that is going to be the main thing. But to help share everything, because I'm useless on Instagram, pretty useless. I haven't opened Facebook in ages. So that would be, but I think really it's taking it into our own hands, and that's the biggest impact that people can have is looking at the guidelines, going to the races that they're doing, talking to the people they know, sharing She Races. It's a tool for people to kind of, often I think women find it hard to complain about things and say kind of, I think it should be this way. And I feel the guidelines are a way to say, hey, race director, just on your race, there are a few things that could be improved. Here's a link to some guidelines that have been put together by talking to lots of other race directors, as well as lots of women. And I think that makes it easier to kind of address some of these issues. So the most important thing people can do is share the guidelines, speak out, talk to racers, think about how they can do better. I think it's not just women, it's men too. And male allies are really, really important. And some of the guidelines are actually about behavior in races and what's acceptable and what's not. So I did a Centurion podcast talking about kind of women in racing. And one of the things that kind of women don't want is you can't just run behind a woman at night and not say anything. Or run with you. It's really scary. It's happened to me in quite a few races before where someone's just run behind me for ages. And, that can be, that's fine for some women. That's uncomfortable for others. So kind of on the race that happened the weekend after, people listened to the podcast at South Downs 100, lots of men were running me and go, do you mind if I run with you for a while? Yeah. And it was so refreshing and it made me feel so much safer and more secure. And it's small things like that that I think often people don't realize. And some of the language that's used around women and racing and even by volunteers kind of saying us, telling us to smile and cheer up and saying, oh, you can go a bit faster than that, and things that they wouldn't say to blokes. So I think it's really important to have men speaking out about things that they don't see as right. So when there aren't the equal prize money and there aren't the equal categories and they don't see the provisions for women, I hate to say it, sometimes when it's said with a male voice, it carries more weight, which it shouldn't do, but that's the reality of the world we're in. So I think everyone can support it. And, you know, racers don't have to sign up to She Races to make positive changes. And what we do know is when you do make the positive changes, you know, you get more women on your start line, and that can only be a good thing for runners and the racers themselves.
Yes, well said. And I will put a link to all those guidelines in the film description and the podcast show notes as well, so everybody can have a read and see any of the ones that we haven't covered here today. So it's just fantastic. I think it's brilliant. The more women we can get into racing, the better. The more friendly faces that we have at races, the better. All that remains to be said is, what is next for you, Sophie? I know you've got Wendover Woods this weekend, but have you got anything else for December, or have you got an action-packed 2023? What's in the pipeline for you?
I don't know. It's quite scary. So Wendover was really, I signed up for Wendover. So Wendover, anyone doesn't know, is it's 50 miles of 5 10-mile loops on muddy, hilly. It's the exact course I'm absolutely rubbish at. I'm terrible at technical downhills. I'm terrible in the mud. I'm so scared of falling over and getting injured and not being able to do my school run, because I don't know how I could actually get the kids to school and nursery if I did not hike. So it's going to be really slow, but I signed up when I did the 24, just after I did 24 on concrete, going, I hate concrete. What's the opposite of concrete? So I'm really excited about, so next weekend I'm doing a Maverick 6K with my seven-year-old.
Cool.
And it's a night 6K.
Oh, wow.
So I'm really excited to take him. And my hubby's going to run my four-year-old, and he's going to do the 6K as well.
Oh, wow.
So I'm really excited. There's a really good pizza van normally afterwards. but over Christmas, I don't know. I think next year it's, the problem with runners is you work at what you're good at and you work at what you like.
Yeah.
And if you're really lucky, they're the same thing. And I realized I'm really good at running for 24 hours on flat concrete. Probably not so great at mountain races because I don't live in the mountains. So I think next year might be a mix of, I might do another 24. Cool. And try and get my distance up because I feel there's another 10K in me.
Wow. Really? You can push, you did 217 kilometers in 24 hours. That's incredible.
I think there's another 10K at least.
Amazing.
So it's tempting to want to do that. I'm not a marathon person, but I did run a sub 130 half as a training.
Wow.
And I was like, well, maybe I should look at a sub 3.
Wow.
Because that sounds quite cool.
Yeah.
I don't know. So I'm having a chat with my coach next week after Wendover to see how battered I am. And I think I definitely want to go to the mountains, but I wasn't organized enough for like Lavaredo or Eiger ballots. So this is the worst possible answer. You're expecting me to have this like racing schedule. I'm like,
interesting. I find this fascinating.
But I've got to talk to hubby about what he wants to do and make sure that he wants to do a half Ironman and put them in the calendar so there's no kind of peak training at the same time. But I definitely want to do an adventure mountain race.
Cool.
And I'll probably do another 24 or 100 mile on track.
Yeah.
And then really anything that really fun that comes up, because running's really about fun. And if there's a cool race that I can get to really easily from here, it'd be quite nice to do it.
Oh, where are you based?
So I'm in Guildford in Surrey. So I'm basically on the North Downs Way.
Oh, lovely.
So anyone running up and down North Downs Way at the weekend will probably see me.
Brilliant. And what about Dragon's Back? Like, that's a mountain race.
It's so technical.
Yeah.
So this is why I actually looked at it yesterday thinking, should I do Dragon's Back?
You could do the Hatchling. I'm planning to do the Hatchling.
What's Hatchling?
It's half of it. So it's half of whatever it is every day. So instead of like 40 miles, it's more like 20 miles. You do half of the course each day. So then the following year, you could do the whole course. But it's just like a dip your toe in the water kind of thing. I don't think I'm capable of doing the whole thing. I just don't really want to get fit enough. So I thought that maybe I could do the Hatchling.
I think you're away from home so long.
Yeah, 6 days.
The difference I made was pre-kids, I used to do the stage races.
Yeah.
Which I loved. But you're away so long. And I used to go away after each baby, kind of went away and did a stage race to kind of have that reset. So I did summer spine. It was after I had my second, it was, I think he was about 9 months or 8 months. And I was like, I need to get away.
Yeah.
But now I kind of run it all at once so I can get home.
Yeah.
And that's why I think kind of pushing it, changing it, it really just makes it more easier for the family. Like me going away for 3-4 days is enough. Me going away for a week plus is kind of really difficult on them. And just the logistics plan I have to write is insane.
Yeah.
Just to hand over and try and get kind of some childcare in, see my parents can help, how hubby's going to deal with it. Mm. It does make me kind of look at people that don't have children and go, oh man, what could I do if I didn't have, I would not change things for a world. So I think looking at things where I can kind of be out 2 days max, 3 days, it's just better for everyone. I've got to be respectful of the fact that I do have responsibilities as mum. But the more I sign my hubby up to, I feel I get these brownie points that I can go away.
Yeah.
So when I signed him up to a cycling weekend in the Isle of Wight with LeBlanc last year for his birthday, and he was like, his first question was like, so what race do you want to do? And that was his first, you signed me up for something to go away for 3 days. Where do you want to go?
Yeah. What's the payback?
Exactly, because I was about to tell him I wanted to go to Mull with Impact Marathon.
Yeah.
So he knew me really too well. But if there's a chance to race, and I don't like to fly much, kind of, I'm conscious about the environmental impact as well. But if there is an amazing race that does need a week, I'll do it. But
the whole family could go out or something.
I'd love to do. I mean, I may do Spartathlon next year.
Cool.
And I'd have to think about taking the family out because it's a week, and the idea of having my kids on the finish line would just be the most incredible drive to get to that finish line as soon as possible.
So maybe
Spartathlon.
Cool.
I'm a high qualifier, so I've got an automatic place. So
amazing.
Yeah, maybe that.
Yeah. Oh, well, it does sound like a really exciting 2023 for you. And a really exciting, yeah, a really exciting kind of momentum behind She Races. So yeah, everybody follow, everybody look at the guidelines, badger the races, call out stuff that you don't think is good, and praise the races who are doing really, really well as well. That's always important. But yeah, thank you so much, Sophie, for chatting to us today. It's been absolutely fantastic to have you on. And best of luck in all of your races for this weekend and 2023.
Thanks for having me. And we will get you around UTMB. I know I've got so much, like, next few years, you're doing UTMB. We'll do it.
Ah, okay. Oh, no. I shouldn't have said that. Okay, bye, everyone.
Bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.